Hello and welcome to Ashes of the Imperium, a 40k podcast from sunny England. My name is Dan.
And I'm Steve.
Join us as we explore the 41st millennium in all its glory, as we talk narrative gaming, Warhammer lore, and awesome hobby. From the grim dark corners of Imperial hives,
to the outer reaches of Xenos-infested space.
Welcome to the Ashes of the Imperium.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Ashes of the Imperium. I'm Steve, and I'm hosting today, and I've got two very special guests on to talk about their experiences in 40K and how they play it narratively. So I'll introduce, we have Danny in the blue corner, and in the red corner, we have James. So Danny, do you want to kick us off? Give us the usual heritage. What got you into the gaming, and what means you're still playing?
Steve, it goes back a long way, and it's a bit unusual, and it's my dad, really, I guess, that got me into it. And it wasn't gaming, it was toy fairs. So he's not into football or anything like that, classic dad stuff, you know, he's not into it. he's into toy soldiers, a bit unusual. And I used to go along with him to his toy fairs when he was buying and selling models. But like old stuff, you know, like Napoleonics and things that kids aren't interested in. but spacemen with bolt guns and power armor, I was like, wow, that's quite cool. So I ended up picking up some of these models. I didn't know what they were. Turns out they were Space Crusade. Classic sort of you know the they had their plug-in weapons, didn't they? Plug-in, almost like toys, more like toys. And you could customize what they all had, right? These weapons and backpacks and stuff. So yeah, I got some of these, and I liked painting them as a little kid. Must be 7 years old, you know, very very young. And it was a friend that told me what they were and showed me the game. And that was my my intro, my gateway drug.
Yes. Gets us all
spiraling into 40k.
You hear that a lot though, don't you, that the entry to it is a board game like that, you know, a full-on war game. Probably is a bit intimidating, but a little bit of Space Crusade, Hero Quest, all those sorts of games. So I'm one of those suckers.
They're still knocking board games out of the park though, aren't they? Their board games are still absolute quality. All of them. Maybe not Dreadfleet so much, but you know, the others.
Oh no, I'll fight you over that. It's not balanced and weird stuff happens, but it's all fun. But yeah. So James, you've gone big time into Black Fortress Ghetto, haven't you?
Black Fortress Ghetto, yes. Yeah, that's my thing. I love that. And I got into it late, which was stupid. And now buying everything at triple the price from eBay. But that isn't how I started in gaming. I suppose I best put that out. I've got more heritage. It's one of those. It was 84 years ago. But it's one of those things that I was a role player. I was a role player with you, in fact, Steve, and my brothers and friends. And that's how I kind of the miniature side kind of came out. Because when you, as Danny says, when you're little, you're not sort of interested unless it's got toys involved, and kind of having classic knights and fighters and barbarians and stuff in scantily clad lead Ralph Arthur miniatures, kind of how you found it. And then at school did a bit of role playing, and then somewhere along the line someone introduced 40k, and I started with the Marine Army, because I think everyone starts with the Marine Army because kind of the thing. And yeah, I did that for a while. And then I kind of fell out of it, as a lot of us do. I think I started collecting orcs by the time I started falling away from it. And then there was the barren years where there was no Warhammer.
Stick to wargaming, please.
But yes, and then I suppose my journey back into it involves very closely both of you two idiots. So I think, Steve, you were just getting back into it. I think Ben was interested. And then at the same time, I'd started a new job, and Danny happened to work there. And then we kind of, I think that my first game back was in your flat, Danny, where I brought a load of grey plastic, which I'm still a little embarrassed about. Well, to be fair, I'm not. but I did bring a load of grey plastic.
Should be embarrassed about.
I should be embarrassed about, yeah. And yeah, I shed ton of orcs, which unfortunately now have all been sold on, but my 40K journey is now rounding itself off with my obsession with Beastmen and a custom-made, converted Beast Marine army, which is a faction from Space Wolves based story, but I won't go into the lore of that because that's probably showing its own right and I haven't written it down, so it doesn't count. But yeah, so that's the modeling's been the thing for me, and that I think has always kept me in the gaming. Yeah. Is that I love making models, I love making toys, I love converting, I love changing things, I love the lore and the stories behind it, and that there's so many little nuances. I think that's why I like Blackstone so much, because it's just it paints the world of 40K in such a different light. That's the thing, keeps coming back to it, I think. Just the cool toys, making cool toys, making more models, and having good stories. Probably the role player in me keeps falling into that. Yeah. I guess we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. to explain to the listeners how you two bros met.
Oh man, this is like a sort of an engagement story, isn't it? Do you want to tell it, James, or shall I?
Well,
tell a story.
You always tell it better than me, so maybe you should.
Oh, go on then. So this we met. How many? It really is. How many years ago was it, darling?
It was 2008. We met.
Answer my question. I don't want to do maths.
neither do I, which is why I said the year.
Okay. So is that 12 years?
I say 12. 12, 13 it's actually 13. Years. Yeah, 13 it's not quite years, 30. Yeah. The anniversary is October this year. So
it will sound boring, but it was at work. But this is not boring because we was in the office. I was in the office and I was being ridiculed by my colleagues for my hobby. And we were mid pounding of Dan, and I was getting into trouble. Mm. I collect these toys and I paint these models and everything. But
the thing is, this wasn't the first time this has happened, was it? They basically took the mick out of you because you got excited about stuff. You used to bring it and sort of sell it on eBay, and you used to get really excited about the new models you picked up and new stuff. And nobody cared. Everybody just thought, oh, look at the nerdy, geeky Dan. Anyway, I'll let you get on.
I front it out and I get away with it and I give as good as I get, and that's fine. Mm. So I own it. It's like the dwarf said in not Lord of the Rings, the other one, Game of Thrones. own it, right? Wear it like armor. That's what I do, you know. Anyway, so I'm telling the dwarf to piss. Deal with it, you know. And in comes Morgan, and Captain is dressed in, he's like in Hawaiian. This is a corporate office, right? And this guy comes in, graphic designer, dressed in like shorts, Hawaiian shirt, flip flops, long hair, not caring. Cool dude, right? Cool dude in a corporate office where we're wearing ties and shirt. And so everyone in the office is saying, like, confess to this cool dude what you do, Dan. You know, what geek you are. I'm like, oh, okay, I collect these little toy soldiers. I paint them, you know, Warhammer. Have you heard of that? And Morgan's response was, oh, really? Fantasy or 40K? and everyone's jaw dropped in the office. Yeah. They were like, oh, my God. Right, you guys are everywhere, it seems. And they're not wrong. We are.
We are. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so it is a bit of a it was exactly that time then. I think, Steve, you were just considering getting back, or you just started collecting again, or started picking stuff up. So it was we all got tied together at the same time, certainly in my mind, because it was like, Steve's getting back into it, shouldn't I? Oh, I'm not sure. Well, I like models, but I don't know. And then I met this
looking fool. Back on it is fascinating how interconnected everyone is, you know, and what an influence you have on someone else without realizing that's what's going on. And it sounded like snowballs. Now it's Steve influencing us. Absolutely. And the world with this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, I mean, the thing is, it was all 40K at that point. And I think it's when I was talking to you, Dan, that fantasy's become sort of my biggest thing, and now back into 40K. yeah, I think you went, oh, have you seen Fantasy? And it's kind of like, oh, I don't know. And then the Beastman book landed, the original, the proper Beastman book, the seventh edition book that's just Beastman. Doesn't got Beast of Chaos, none of that nonsense. Beastman. Yeah. And that was it. That changed my life.
Are Beastman sponsoring you? Do you get paid per mention of the word?
No. It's a kindred spirit thing. You know this, Danny. It's like you choose the faction that speaks to you the most, and that's it. And that's why I've now got Space Beastman.
It makes perfect sense, mate.
It does. You can't,
at least in your head.
It does in my
now,
head.
Speak, speak, your listeners can't see what Captain Morgan looks like, but. If they could, they would totally understand why he's all about the Beast Man, because he looks like a Beast Man.
Well, I tell you what, we'll put your Twitter feeds at the end of the show, and we'll see if we can get James to have a photo there that they can find you.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Then we'll put that one back up.
Right, there's something that we all love, and it'd be great to sort of share some of your thoughts with the listeners. So Danny, what does narrative gaming mean to you?
It's an essay question, by the way, not a one word answer.
It's not multiple choice.
In a word. Do you know what I really have thought about this, and to me it's more about what it's not about, because it's not about winning, you know. In my view it's not about winning. And so it's more about telling a story. I think that's the obvious answer. It's more about telling a story. For me, it's not about winning. Or rather, it's about redefining. This is a bit cheesy, but it's about redefining how you win. Like, what makes you a winner? And to me, it's if there's like little epic moments within the story that you're playing that you remember forever. And that's awesome. So I have played hundreds of games and lost 99% of them. but I don't feel that way because I have made sure that there's always been something really cool that's happened in there that I'll remember forever. You know, the three of us had a game the other day in Warhammer World where my war boss jumped out of the truck because the truck was moving too slowly to run in front of a convoy of Space Marine tanks. And then flipped the Predator at the front by doing 28 wounds at it on his own because his boys didn't want to go with him. The truck was... I didn't win the game. Who cares? You know, that was an epic moment for me, and I'll remember that forever. My answer is about, like, it's not about winning suddenly, you know, a narrative game has to have lots of cool moments, lots of cool stories. So it's, and you did this for us, Steve. You set that up. You made that happen, you know, and that's really cool.
So here's a question for you then. So if it's not about winning, there are some absolute metrics in the game that it's a six to wound. I've rolled a six. You've failed your save. You're dead. Take your model off. I don't think we usually play that we break the rules.
No, to make it a story.
So how do you set it up so that without breaking the rules of the game, you're still not determined by the winner?
So in that exact same game that we played at Warhammer World, there was a point where your commander, your Imperial Guard Talon commander, was surrounded by a bunch of grots and was like fighting for his life. I found myself suddenly cheering for you, you know, and I wasn't trying to kill you. I was just rolling the dice, going with the flow. But I wanted this Talon commander to come out scot free, and he survived round after round after round, and just by luck, you know. So we did play the rules. We did roll the dice, and I was cheering for you. And so the dice kind of made that story happen, and made that. And again, that's another moment I'll remember. You know, that's pretty cool.
Oh, cool. So James, what about you? What does narrative mean to you?
So narrative. I mean, you and I, Steve, I've come from a role playing world, and role playing games is kind of my thing. And I know I've dragged Danny into role playing. I know I've ref games for both of you in different scenarios, and it kind of, the narrative side falls into a similar element. It's about telling a story. So when I GM a game, or when I run a role playing game, I've got a narrative in mind. I've got a story that I want you to experience, and I want you to be part of. And I think that's the translation to the wargaming side, is that there's a story to tell, and that's the story I'd like to tell. Or with wargaming, when you're playing, it's very much about the story that I want to be part of. So it's like the let's choose an analogy. It's like the Steve Jackson Choose Your Own Adventure books. don't roll your eyes, Steve. but it's that sort of thing. So you've got a story. So as Daniel was talking about that game, so that game where he's gone and taken his war boss out and punched a predator to death. Which I wasn't
28 upset
about.
Wounds.
28 wounds.
Let's remind the viewers, 28
which
wounds
was, I mean, which is
on
great,
a predator that, attack. And it exploded.
That's the whole point of the story, is that the unpredictable nature of it. So the story was, we'd captured the grot with the plans, and the orcs wanted to get the grot back, and we had it in a convoy of predators and razorbacks. And the war boss went, well, can you get the truck in the way? And the truck went, well, it's going to take us a bit of a while. And he went, oh, for goodness sake, jumped out and charged it. And all his men went, he's going a bit quick, we can't keep up. But he then ran into the tank. And it's that moment of that superhero moment when he basically claws it, and the rear end of the tank goes spinning over the top of him and explodes in as he punches the tank to death. And that's the story kind of developing. So suddenly we've got this big thing.
So just to interrupt you there a second, sorry about that. Because Steve was kind of asking, like, okay, we can tell a story, but there are rules to this, right?
Yeah.
So I think the narrative game in this example, we started the story, we set the scene, and then the dice kind of helped the story along.
Yeah.
Because I might not have made that charge. I might not have done 28 wounds. Yeah. I'd probably done
27,
right?
Yeah. With your luck.
But I think that's so. The difference between being a GM in a role playing game is that you know the story you want to tell. And although your characters, any GM who's ever reffed any role playing game knows, your characters will immediately do something that upends it. If you've written tons of notes, it won't work. But with wargaming, because you can all be part of it, the story kind of writes itself, and that's based on the rules. So, yeah, Danny doing, I mean, he might have not done enough wounds to kill the tank, and then the tank might have run him over, and it'd be a completely different story. Yeah. And we'd all be going, do you remember that epic charge your war boss made on my predator, and then my predator ran him over? And we'd all be laughing about that. I mean, you have one of your wargaming mates that we get to get a chance to play with. You death rolled his Demon Prince. And it's still an epic story that's talked about. And it wasn't, I don't think that was a very narrative game. It was a bit of a smash face game, but it has those moments, and it's expanding a story around the action that happens. So it's almost like that, that sort of legend building. So when you go into the individual stories within a battle, it's that sort of epic legend story, sort of saga telling that goes on within that kind of builds a narrative. And it's the stuff we talk about. I mean, I'm going to skip into fantasy, because that's probably what I've done more gaming of than I have 40k.
That's right.
But we were all competition players with under 8th edition. Not very good ones, I have to say. But
there's literally a wooden spoon in your trophy cabinet.
Yeah, there is, and I'm very proud of it. There's games that I played there that had really intricate moments between my army and the person I was playing against that just told a story. It was an epic battle between, it was a Demon Prince and my Doom Bull. And it was a proper sit down, stand up, punch up. And we just went at it for about three turns, to which I'd almost killed him, and he just managed to edge it. And then I chased him across the table with a unit of gauze to finish it off. But that story, the tale of that story is the embellishment. I think that's the joy. And as Dan was saying, it's the narrative over the winning. And I know there's loads of people in the hobby who it's about building that list that will really, and playing it well, and that's the excitement for them. I mean, I'll never be able to do that. I can't build a list that's very good. I like playing armies that aren't very good in general, because I like pretty things.
Hearing you talk is making me kind of like actually reassess it. That actually there are moments in a stand-up game that you went to, that was at a tournament, you know, and that wasn't a narrative game, it was a tournament game, you know, you're there to win, right? But you drew out narrative. You drew out a story of something cool that was happening. Instead of just you're rolling dice, he's rolling dice, whatever, you drew out a cool story. Like with that Demon Prince one you're talking about, the 40K one, because this is a 40K podcast.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Bringing it back for you, Steve. Bringing it back. we have so that was orcs versus chaos, and all before the battle I've been really psyching out this guy, you know, just fun stuff through WhatsApp saying, oh, my war boss is gonna tear you apart. So his Demon Prince was genuinely scared of my war boss and avoided him. I mean, god, this guy does 28 wounds on predators, you know, you want to avoid him. So he flew around and avoiding him, but he couldn't avoid everything, and so he was trying to avoid the Demon Prince so badly he didn't avoid the Bone Crusher. It's like this battle wagon with a big blitzer on the front of it that just minced him, just absolutely minced him, and it's my favorite moment of the whole game. He couldn't get out of the way of it and got absolutely killed, not very noble death, right? but yeah, that's something that I drew some narrative out of that, because just before he got minced, Warboss was trying to shoot him, trying to catch him and shot him and did a wound with his silly little shooter.
So here's a question for you guys. How do you start a game as a story? So if we all agree we want these stories to come out, how do we start a game that's different? Something that listeners will have heard me say before. For me, sometimes I find it, I don't find it very engaging when you look at a table and there's a massive fortress in the middle, but for some reason, 12 inches from each corner are these two dots and we're fighting over the dots. And for me, it's just like, why aren't we fighting over the fortress? You know, why are these two dots the most important thing? And that's how you set up the game. So I guess, how do you guys, Danny, kick off? You know, how do you start a game that isn't going to be fair and balanced?
Steve, the safest way is to let you do it.
I am available. Very good rates.
So if you are not available and I have to do it, I don't game an awful lot, right? And when I do, these are sort of things that we put in the diary and we look forward to, and there's a bit of hype in advance. So we've usually, it's very unlikely I'd have rocked up and say, hey, just play a game, what am I going to do? Oh, I don't know. Yeah. There'll have been some thought in advance. And often I have a date in my diary that I like to have, because it motivates me to paint something, to have a particular unit ready for that. It's a great motivator, having a deadline, right? That's a motivator for everyone. And so there've been times where I painted bits of scenery, or objectives, like I've got the that little drop pod, escape pod, you know, that's come out of a spaceship, and that's bags of narrative in just something as simple as that. I think that's how I would set it up, is that there'd have been some thought in advance, a particular thing that I want to paint for it, and then we make a story around that. So in that very example where my friend's Demon Prince got mullered by a death roller, we were rescuing the drop pod.
No, amazing. Right, guys, so I've got a question for you. Does a game have to be fair? And what does fair mean? Or does it matter at all? James?
No, next question. I think no, it doesn't need to be fair. I think if you look at historical battles, there's plenty of those that weren't fair. And I think if you're doing, so I think Daniel's talking about storytelling and narrative game and how you build a storytelling or narrative game. It comes down, and I'm going to sound a bit lovey, it comes down to motivation. It comes down to what is one army trying to achieve that the other army is trying to stop? And that's kind of what it is. If it's a battle for a pass, if it's a Rorke's Drift or an entombed army. The example you gave about having a big castle or a big fortress in the middle. Why aren't we fighting over that? It's about an army holding out from waiting for reinforcements. Those aren't fair. Those battles that have gone through history are not fair. It's all those sort of things. I think you can play it in a number of different ways, but you've got to work out what the what the objective is and what the motivation
is.
I'd
say even if you were trying to make it fair, it never will be. It never will be. Unless it's only fair if you have the exact same armies, right? And the exact same scenery.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you've got chess. And who wants to play that? Jesus.
Yeah. Exactly. We don't want a bunch of a load of chess pieces with pew-pews that can't. It's like, no, it is about the motivation of the army. And that's the thing. If the narrative game we most recently played was, there's an objective, you want to get that, we want to stop you getting that, that's the story, and whatever builds out of that will build the next game on whatever the outcome is. I think we could have been gaming about it. We chose not to be, because that doesn't make much sense to have a narrative game where you're just trying to smash face. Like, if you've got to set one objective,
that's a really good point. So you might think that unfair means that you lose, right? But we would never make it so that you just get whitewashed and absolutely curb stomped. You know, that's unfair, but also a bit dull for both players. Yeah.
So do you think that means you have to have a reasonable grasp of the game and the power level? this question's for Danny.
I think perhaps fairness and balance ensures that both players have a good time, and that the game lasts for a certain amount. You don't want it to be over in just 10 seconds, do you? Yeah, sure. Or the game.
We say that, and we, like Danny said, we'd had big conversations beforehand. What are stories we bringing? What are troops? What are their roles? You know, we had all that narrative fun. When we sat at the table, we did kind of make sure the forces were balanced-ish within 20%. Mm-hmm. But so,
yeah, I think you've just raised something really important there. We knew where we were going. We knew we were going to go do some gaming, and there was weeks of talking about the game. Mm. There was weeks of us talking about what we're going to bring, what we've got. And we did make balanced lists. And when we got to the hall and we put it all out, we went, no, what we're going to do is we're going to put all this here. And, that's the game. And this is going to be the story. And this is what we're going to do. Because that's what we've been talking about for the past past 3 weeks. And that's the thing. I think that's the thing about narrative gaming and storytelling. You can turn up and you can just do it. But actually, a lot of the fun is talking about it beforehand, talking about the armies and why we're at the planet and what's going on there and kind of the history of the world that you're in and all that lore stuff that GW do actually really, really well. You kind of do a little bit of that yourselves. And yeah, that meant when we turned up,
we kind of knew what's going on. Even in that moment, so you kind of suggested, yeah, we brought loads of stuff and kind of put things out on the table. We were all thinking on the same page, because as we were putting things out, we kind of knew what they would do. So as you're putting your tanks out, you weren't just lining them up in front of me to kill me and ruin the deck.
No.
You were like putting them in a vulnerable position as a convoy, because it looked cool. Yeah. It was really fun. And as a narrative.
Yeah.
And then I brought things. I had guys on the roofs, didn't I? Like commando boys, you know, sort of dotted around as if they'd infiltrated in straight away. Mm. Are they optimal? I don't know. But it was fun. It worked.
But this is the thing. That's the thing. I mean, we've all got a bit of a World War II in that, but I know we can't talk about it. not here. But in the Second World War, the invasion of the Russian Empire, sort of Lithuania, Latvia, that Barbarossa, I think it's that. Is it Steve? You can correct me. But there's a story of a Soviet tank, a KV-2, I want to say, that's basically been so badly damaged that it can't move, and it basically sits there and just holds back the entire of the German Blitzkrieg for like a day and a half on its own. That's an amazing story. That's an amazing piece of narrative. Was it fair? No, it was one tank that was running out of ammo that chose to stand its ground to allow that. That's a narrative. That's a story. Did they win? Eventually, no, they didn't make it. But it's this fantastic story that kind of builds, and it's building those things in Warhammer. Whether they're silly, whether it's like something sensible, or whether it's something a bit silly, when it's like, oh, we need to protect the Emperor's blancmange recipe, and everybody wants to get it because it's the most powerful blancmange in the universe. That's the story, and that's what you're trying to do. It's not necessarily you're trying to smash everybody's face. It might be it's in a citadel and you've got a limited amount of guard to hold it, and you've got a horde of chaos coming to come and do it.
I know
it's quite good actually. That's off the top of
our next narrative game.
But that's the sort of thing, and that's where
this
it comes
is how
from.
Sophisticated it's like, it is.
Yeah, ready yeah. steady
but
game.
I'm not 100% sure what blancmange even means.
I think it's an egg dessert, isn't it? I think if I
remember. Is it like Angel Delight?
Yeah, it's like posh Angel Delight, but like Angel Delight before it was anything. But then you've got that game that whichever way that game then plays out, if the guard protect the blancmange recipe, or if the chaos marauders come and take it, then you've got the chaos marauders now on the run. They're trying to get it away, but they've been decimated by trying to get into the citadel. And now you've got guard reinforcements coming in to go and catch them. Yeah. And then you've got that game to play and see where that goes.
That's what we did at Warhammer World, wasn't it? It was one game, and then Steve, you made that very clear that whichever way it goes, doesn't matter, whichever way it goes, that's going to decide the narrative for the next game.
Yeah, and that's what we did. So I think that's the thing in narrative. It's not about being fair. It's about the motivations and the world that you built and all that kind of build up. And it can be 10 minutes talking before the table. It can be like we like to do 4 or 5 weeks of gassing about models and what story is and what the planet is. And yeah, and if in doubt,
I'd like to be a bit controversial as well. I think someone moaning about it being fair is moaning, is whinging, right? Just deal with it. You know, it's not fair. and telling a story. Yeah. And I doubt any of us would say, oh, this isn't fair. That wouldn't go down very well, would it?
No, I think, you know, and it's a phrase that gets used quite a lot, but the whole social contract thing, isn't it? It's about, you know, what have we agreed to do? We're going to spend 2-3 hours of our time together.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do we all agree is fun?
Yeah. And I think that you've hit the nail just in that phrase. It doesn't need to be fair as long as it's fun.
Yeah.
And as long as it's fun for everybody.
I think that's
another one. One that we can wear around to parents' houses at least.
Next thing for you is what's giving you a buzz about 40K right now? So it can be anything. What are you excited for?
I'll go first because it'll be really quick. I'm terrible. I don't really keep up with what's going on in 40K at all. And I actually had to have a research about what's going on in 40K to have a look at what things might actually interest me. And all my interests are a bit old. I have to say, is it the Mechanicus models? Yeah, Adeptus Mechanicus. They're probably really old now, but I saw them on the site and thought, okay, if I had to start a new army, I'd probably start there. They're a lot of fun. They're really interesting. And I think that I like that. I like that the models are getting more interesting. They're getting more diverse and exciting. I think that's great. I think that's if I had to pick something, that's what I'd do. Most of my time I just spend in my own little hobby brain.
I think it doesn't
matter what 40K does.
I think they'd really work for you because they've definitely got a darker side. They've got their own agenda.
Yeah.
So I think rather than being quite so clean, squeaky clean cut,
And they're pretty. They're really pretty. And that's what actually matters. I want pretty toys.
Yeah, no, 100%. You've got the amount of time it takes to build, paint, and then go and play games with them. You do really want them to be something you enjoy. Mm. Right, Danny. So here's a question for you guys, actually, before Danny, sorry to interrupt. Have you seen the new Kill Team video?
Literally just have, yeah. Oh my goodness, yeah. It's dark. It's really dark.
Yeah.
Like, it's they're just taking in turns to kill each other, which I guess is 40K, really. Oh my God, yeah, just brutal. Absolutely brutal. And when one guy's overcome another guy, oh, brilliant, well done. He then gets scragged, and then someone else scrags him. Oh, wow. The burned alive guy.
Yeah. I mean, luckily he had a Krieg gas mask on, so we didn't get to see his flesh peel away. But it was dark, and so it looks like there's some more orcs coming your way, Danny.
Oh yeah. So that's what are you excited about, Danny? Orcs. very much orcs. I don't know if you. Your listeners are aware, during the pandemic of this 18 months, every single orc that I owned, that's when I've been painting them during the pandemic. I haven't painted any before. And now I've just topped 300 infantry. I always tell people I paint to relax and unwind. I've needed to relax and unwind an awful lot during the pandemic. Haven't we all? I've literally got two more models to paint. One I bought with you guys in Warhammer World. That's that new Orc big track. And then the other is that limited edition knob. I don't know his name. you know the one. but I'm probably not going to open him up because I'm a geek. I'm gonna keep him new in box. So it's I feel like Games Workshop have been spying on me. They've been watching this guy. He's an orc addict for 18 months. Paint like a lunatic. Now we'll release some more new orcs for him to buy and paint.
Yeah, because we got the beast snaggers coming very soon as well.
Oh my god!
What the beast? What
beast snaggers? So the beast snaggers are.
Are they orcs riding things? Aren't they?
Yes. So like the big four-legged squid.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about those guys is that there's the little subtle, like they've all got bionics. So clearly some guy has been feeding a squig and has had his arm bitten off and he's been placed by a sort of raggedy looking bionic or bionic foot and little, again, narrative, right? Little bits of storytelling in the models themselves. Yeah. Oh, I love it. Absolutely. Yeah. So cool.
So we're seeing the fighting wrapping up in Warzone Caradon, and we're going to get news out from the new Warzone, which is called Octarius, and that's where we're going to see these new orcs turn up. So I'm hoping sometime soon they're going to be fighting the Astra Militarum when I get a new book for my guys.
So yes, Steve, with the new Militarum, Astra Militarum, oh my goodness. So number one, if in that trailer we've just seen in the new Kill Team, does that mean there's going to be plastic Krieg in that box? That's very exciting prospect.
Dangerous. Very dangerous.
I had
the whole army, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and I got intimidated painting them, and then they changed the rules slightly and I got grumpy and I sold it, and I really shouldn't have done. But plastics, could be interesting.
And you look at the quality of the guards, that those limited edition Catachans coming out, the new Teneth first and only, if I pronounce that right. They're looking good.
I can see them getting some love very soon, so that'll be good. Right, we're going to wrap up. I'm going to give you a wish for 40k, guys. So just before you, if you're allowed to wish, what's the one thing you wish you could have? So it could be something, an out of date model, or it could a brand new faction that you want, or just something that you wish you could have. James, what would you be?
Yeah, come to me, because I know nothing about 40k world, because I make custom models out of things that I don't like.
What about a codex for your custom models?
So a codex for the Beast Marines, that would be kind of cool. And I mean that people would stop asking me, oh, so you run a Chaos Marine army? And I go, no, I don't. I run a Chaos Beastman army that are a successor chapter to the Space Wolves. So and then people just look at me.
So for the listeners, so they can do a bit of catch up, what do they look like?
So they are... they look like space beastmen. They're beast marines. They have they're kind of lower half beastmen, upper half space marine, with space marine with beastmen heads. They look tough as, to be fair. I just love them. Oh, yeah. And they come out of they came out of an idea that I think Danny suggested doing Necromunda. I thought, oh, space beastmen, because I'm a bit beastman focused. If for those who don't know me. And I just
looks
just
like a beastman, smells like a beastman, thinks like a beastman. Yeah.
So that would be quite cool. But when you asked this question beforehand, the other thing I'm big into, as I say, old stuff, is Blackstone Fortress. And I'd like to see a Blackstone Fortress faction. That would be cool. Like a drone faction, like the Guardian drones and the little drones. Those models are epic. They're really, really cool. So if I could have anything, I'd say, a Blackstone Fortress. If Games Workshop are listening and they want me to buy a new army, do a Blackstone Fortress faction, coming out of the Blackstone Fortress out into the wider universe and causing a load of trouble. And I'd buy their drones all day, absolutely all of them, as many as I could. So yeah, that and Beast Marines, but I don't think they're going to sell on that one. But yeah. No, well, I could talk about beasts all the day. You know me.
you never know who's listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Danny, come on.
My wish is that the Games Workshop keep knocking out of the park with the hobby supplies. Because if you'd have asked me this, I don't know, when did they release Contrast? 2 years ago, something like that?
Not sure. I only bought mine.
It's pretty new, isn't it?
On your recommendation, in fact.
Yeah.
So if you'd have asked me this question like 2 years ago, I'd have never said, oh my goodness, I wish they would release contrast paints. They invented it. It's a whole new thing. And I drink the stuff. I love it. It's essential. I can't imagine another way to paint anymore. Using the Agrax everything, non-oil, the contrast paints. Oh my goodness!
Just to point out that you just point to two things that aren't contrast paint. You said, "I love it. I love the contrast paint." You talked about washes.
I was saying, so these things are essential. I would take out shares deliberately in these actual products if such a thing existed. But I could never have predicted them. I could never have said, Steve, I wish they would invent something like that because I need to be able to cover my models in brown swill. it will look amazing. So I know, because they are geniuses, that they will release something else that's just as epic like that. So that's my wish. So I kind of can't really answer you. They invent something cool.
Okay. So I'm totally with you with that. I think if there's one slight hole in their offering at the minute is metallics, because there are some amazing metallic paints out there at the moment. So I think, but I mean, that's a small thing really, but yeah, no, I agree. And I think I end up using contrast myself a bit more tactically, because sometimes.
Ouch.
No, for the models. So
whereas I've got the Blitzkrieg approach.
I think it's when you want to do a model and there's a contrast paint that's close and you go, I'll use it. For me, I just like, it just reveals itself as contrast rather than. So what I'll tend to do is I'll go, right, I'll use the actual color for that one bit. But yeah, leather boots, yeah, no problem. You know, snake bite, no problem. Black armor, yeah, no problem. Black 10 plus contrast. So I think that's the only thing for me. But yeah, I just go to the same part of the store and buy same rack.
You've helped me refine. You've really helped me refine my answer, actually. Yeah, a contrast paint for bolt gun metal, you know, because that's the most annoying stage of my orc. I just slosh on contrast paint and then I have to like sit, I've got to use a proper brush and properly paint on the metal. Oh my God. Yeah, contrast paint, bolt gun metal.
Well, that's my
answer.
No, brilliant.
I mean, just on Danny's stuff, I'm a bit of a convert to contrast. I still got, I mean, I went out and bought basically the entire range, and they're mainly for the Blackstone Fortress stuff, because I got so many models and so many different things that I kind of want to play with, and it took me a little while to work out how it works. All right, I'm not a quick painter. I'll get there in the end, but it's not fast. All right. But yeah, it's a nice change of pace, and you can get them out quick. You can play with them and nuance them into something really special. They're a really good product. They're a really good product. I'd say probably the GW technicals may need some. There's some really, really nice technical stuff out there, and you mainly show it off, Steve, to be fair. I tend to make it up as I go along, but that some of their technicals could probably do with coming up to the sort of standard of their contrast paints.
Yeah.
And yeah, Noln oil. I'm a Noln oil. Is that right?
Yes.
Rather than Agrax. I do. Yeah. So yeah.
No. They just
need to keep doing what they're doing. They're just their stuff, and it's really good. And I know they have their detractors. And I think there's always detractors around their sort of scenery and sort of their kind of static grass and gravels and stuff like that, which is kind of like, it's gravel and it's really expensive because it's got a GW name on it. It's a classic meme, but the stuff they're doing and in the hobby, I mean, you rattle on about that, excuse me, pun, rattle on about their spray cans, Danny, and how good they are. And I can't really argue. They are quite good. I've used some of them. I tend to use whatever I've got in the garage, but yeah, all their hobby stuff's really good. And being a hobbyist,
I tell you what, they are really good, those spray cans, because I've given you a sack full of, I don't know,
yeah,
8, 9, 10 cans, yeah, of army paint that's blocked, and I hate that you've
a load of stuff that you've broken, because like, you can't.
Oh, it's cheaper. I will splash out the £2 more that it costs. It never blocks.
Yeah. So yeah.
Brilliant, guys. Well, thank you very much for coming on. It's been really, really good. We usually just do this anyway.
Yeah.
Bouncing voice messages backwards and forwards on WhatsApp.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having us, I think. It's, yeah.
That's great. That's great. Pleasure. So to share with the listeners, if you want to give us your Twitter information so they can find out what you're doing, see all the models you're painting or not painting and what you're up to. So
I'm sure they all know me already, Steve. Don't worry.
Well, imagine there's just one.
I am Brawler Guts. Mm. Brawler Guts.
And I'm @alone_withmyaxe. But I'm a slow burn, so you need to kind of follow me for a long time to kind of get projects from start to finish. So,
an acquired taste.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste. There's occasionally some hobby content, and you'll go, "Oh yeah, I remember when you posted something about that 4 or 5 years ago."
That's brilliant, guys. So, thank you very much, and yeah, thank you guys for listening in. We'll have a new show out very soon. So until then, take care.